on World News.
Our top story, Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations against Israeli military targets deep inside occupied territory. In one of the operations, a group targeted the Shraga military base north occupied city of Aqqa with rockets. Hezbollah also targeted the Tel Nof air base south of Tel Aviv with missiles. The resistance movement said it targeted Israel's Hahotrim base for a first time with rockets as well. The Yeknoim illicit factory, the southeast of Haifa, was also hit. The group also targeted several gatherings of Israeli forces in a number of settlements. Now, Hezbollah has managed to inflict heavy losses on Israeli occupation forces since the regime began its aggression into Lebanon back in October 2023. The group has so far destroyed over 40 Merkava tanks, several military bulldozers, armored vehicles, and Israeli drones, and over 100 Israeli soldiers have so far been killed and over 1,000 injured by Hezbollah fighters. And earlier, our Beirut correspondent Maddie Amsala updated us on latest Israeli attacks on Lebanon and also Hezbollah's retaliatory operations against Israeli military targets.
The Israelis are systematically destroying the southern suburbs of Beirut. Today, there were 13 strikes on South Beirut, in addition to the targeting and the destruction of southern parts of the country, especially the areas near the border. Now, Hezbollah has made it clear that as long as the aggression continues, they will not stop their operations, which they also seem to mention in every single statement that it's also in support of the Palestinian people and their resistance. Today, Hezbollah, and as always, it seems every day is Hezbollah is diversifying their operations, the type of operations, the quality and the quantity of their rockets, and the type, of course, of armaments that they're using. They're also using drones, which have become a clear challenge to the Israelis. Now, Hezbollah has said that they targeted for the very first time the Yakimat Elite military base, which is a technological factory. It's also responsible for, of course, a lot of the military industry for the Israelis, which they, of course, usually boast about. This is 50 kilometers away from the Lebanese border in the southeast of Haifa, which is quickly transforming into another Kiryat Shmona, as Hezbollah had promised. They also targeted the Al-Manara area, or Israeli forces in the Al-Manara base, at least three times, in addition to Al-Abad base.
In one of the deadliest attacks, at least six Palestinians were killed and several wounded after Israeli warplanes bombed a residential building in Nusayra refugee camp in central Gaza. Israeli jets also bombed a tent housing displaced Palestinians in Deir al-Bala, also in the central part of the besieged strip, leaving a number of Palestinians dead and injured there. To the north, Israeli forces targeted a house in the city of Beit Lahia, which also led to deaths of several Palestinians. Northern Gaza has been the focal point of unrelenting Israeli air and artillery strikes, as well as a crippling siege for over a month now. Since Israeli aggression began October last year, over 43,600 Palestinians have been killed and over 103,000 injured. And for your update, we checked in with our Gaza correspondent earlier, Moti Abu Musabi from the central city of Deir al-Bala.
Well, let me begin with the fish massacre that took place moments ago in Deir al-Bala city after the Israeli fighter drones attacked the tents of the Palestinian people in the Al-Bassa area in the western part of Deir al-Bala city, killing at least two Palestinian civilians and injuring multiple others. In addition to that, a big fire erupted and engulfed several tents of the Palestinian displaced in that area. When it comes to Al-Nusrat refugee camp, the Israeli occupation forces carried out an airstrike against a residential building in the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp, killing six Palestinian civilians. Needless to mention that the Israeli artillery shelling was maintained heavily and brutally against the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp. We are still hearing several and deafening explosions of those attacks being launched against the Palestinian residential buildings. And as you know, the Israeli occupation forces on the ground continue to detonate and dynamite more residential buildings there. The current situation is still excruciating and catastrophic for the Palestinian people, particularly in Al-Nusrat refugee camp, because it is considered as one of the most crowded areas across all areas of Gaza Strip, because it is completely overcrowded with the displaced people, particularly when it comes to the northern part of Al-Nusrat refugee camp.
top, UN official has condemned worsening humanitarian crisis in Gaza, describing Israeli violations against Palestinians as acts reminiscent of the gravest international crimes.
We are witnessing acts reminiscent of the gravest international crimes. Ambulances have been destroyed and hospitals have come under attack. Supplies to the north are being cut off and people are being pushed farther south. The daily cruelty we see in Gaza seems to have no limits.
Joyce Msuya made a statement at the UN Security Council meeting on Palestine. She condemned Israel's military recent escalations in northern Gaza, noting civilians have been driven from their homes and often forced to witness deaths of their family members. UN official raised alarm over Israeli Knesset's recent bill, which banned activities of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA. She urged UN member states to use diplomatic and economic pressure to prevent further suffering of the Palestinian people. The Security Council meeting came after a recent UN-backed report warned of imminent and substantial likelihood of famine in the blockaded Palestinian territory. The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has condemned the U.S. for complicity in Israel's Gaza genocide, and this after Washington said Israel was not violating U.S. law on level of aid entering the territory. Hamas said Israel is deceiving the international community by creating a false impression of aid deliveries. Movement said, however, regime continues its campaign of ethnic cleansing, genocide, and starvation, exploiting the world's indifference to its crimes. The resistance group called for immediate end to regime's atrocities, especially in northern Gaza, where a heavy siege is underway for over a month now. The remarks come as earlier Tuesday, the Biden administration claimed that Israel had taken measures to improve delivery of humanitarian aid into Gaza, and therefore Washington will continue its arms transfers to the regime. Iran's foreign minister has warned the U.S. against resumption of its so-called maximum pressure campaign against Tehran, stressing Washington's previous attempts to oppress Iran only failed. On his ex account, Abbas Araghchi said first version of maximum pressure was met with maximum resistance, resulting in Washington's maximum defeat. He pointed to Iran's advances in peaceful nuclear program after U.S. imposed unilateral sanctions back in 2018. He instead called for maximum wisdom, which he said will benefit everyone. The warning comes following reports that U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is considering imposing further sanctions on Tehran after taking office in January. Back in 2018 and during his first term, Trump launched what he called a maximum pressure campaign against the country after unilaterally withdrawing from an international accord on Iran's nuclear program. Researcher and political analyst Christopher Helali says that U.S. unilateral sanctions have prompted Iran to become more independent, expanding its strategic partnership with non-Western countries.
It resulted in the victory that Iran is now a key player in the development of a multipolar world, that Iran is a key member of the BRICS, that it participates now in the Shanghai Cooperation Organization there. And of course, that it's a key member of this resistance, not only to regional powers like the Zionist entity, but also to Western hegemony overall. And so the victory of the Trump administration was making Iran even stronger, even more self-sufficient, and less reliant on the West. And so if they continue on this path, we will only see a deepening and a strengthening of Iran's ongoing strategic partnerships with Russia, with China, and with other countries, both neighboring countries as well as countries far beyond.
Yemeni armed forces continue retaliatory operations against U.S. warships in the Red and Arabian Seas in support of the Palestinian and Lebanese people. Here's an announcement by Brigadier General Yahya Al-Sari, spokesperson for the Yemeni Armed Forces.
In retaliation to the American-British aggression against our country and in continuation of supporting the Palestinian and Lebanese people, the missile and UAV forces of the Yemeni armed forces carried out two specific military operations. The first operation targeted the American aircraft carrier Abraham, located in the Arabian Sea, with a number of cruise missiles and drones. The operation has successfully achieved its objectives and led to thwarting the operation that the American enemy was preparing against our country. The other operation targeted two American destroyers in the Red Sea with a number of ballistic missiles and drones. The operation has successfully achieved its objectives. Accordingly, the Yemeni armed forces hold the American and British enemy responsible for turning the Red Sea region into a zone of military tension and its repercussions on maritime navigation. Launching an aggression against Yemen within the American-British defensive actions of the Israeli enemy by the American warships will only push the Yemeni armed forces to further use their legitimate right to defend, confront, and strike all hostile threats in the Red Sea and Arab Seas and in any other region that Yemeni weapons reach. The operations of the Yemeni armed forces will not stop until the aggression on Gaza is stopped, the siege is lifted, and the aggression on Lebanon is stopped.
Now, moving on to Amsterdam, where the Dutch capital has seen yet another round of police crackdown against pro-Palestine protesters. Demonstration on Monday night turned violent when police in riot gear used force to disperse demonstrators. Situation escalated after an electric train caught fire, but police did not specify reason behind the blaze. Earlier in the day, police rounded up hundreds of people who gathered at city's Dam Square, defying a ban on demonstrations. Tensions are high in Amsterdam since last week, following a football match between a Tel Aviv club and an Amsterdam club. Some Israeli fans were caught on camera tearing up Palestinian flags and vandalizing people's homes with Palestinian flags in front of them and chanting discriminatory anti-Arab slogans. And in response, pro-Palestine activists clashed with the Israelis, prompting police to intervene. Calls for Paris to cut all military supplies and take a tougher stance against Israel have so far fallen on deaf ears, officially at least. Peter Hume has been gauging the public opinion and has this report from the French capital.
To some, France is standing idly by as Gaza and its population are destroyed by what many consider to be Israeli genocide. Tabiazi is a Palestinian refugee from Gaza.
What I want from the French government and what I want from the French people and all of the world, just to give the Palestinians the same human rights. The Palestinians want to be free, just want to be has their freedom.
I want the French government to stop, completely cut all ties with Israel. I want the French government to recognize Palestine. I want the French government to stop being hypocrites and actually play a role in making the change.
Harsh words calling for tough actions, which are unlikely to be taken up by the government here. As Israeli artillery continues to pound Gaza and parts of South Lebanon, France says it no longer supplies Israelis with the military equipment being used on those two fronts. A statement met with skepticism by some. The visit of the highly controversial Israeli minister Bezalel Smotrich for a private gala seems set to go ahead, as does a football match later this week between France and Israel.
While sports are often seen as a unifying factor, this match is now under scrutiny as a potential flashpoint of unrest and protest, especially given the current situation in Lebanon and Palestine. Peter Hume at the Stade de France near Paris.
Pro-Palestine demonstrators have gathered outside a British university to support a visit by the UN Special Rapporteur for Palestinian Territories, Francesca Albanese. Outspoken UN Special Envoys on tour of British universities to discuss the human rights and Israel's genocidal war in Gaza. Saeed Pirza has your story out of London.
Francesca Albanese, the high-profile UN Special Rapporteur on a tour of British universities, paying a short visit to supporters outside London's Queen Mary University ahead of a speech inside. We asked her what message she had brought to the UK.
The UK is in breach of its international law obligations. It's in good companies because many countries are not abiding by international law right now. Israel is committing a genocide. It's not only me saying that. It's hundreds of legal experts, historians, genocide scholars, including from Israel. There are 30 experts of the United Nations saying that. There is the International Court of Justice recognizing the plausibility of a genocide. Why the UK is still trading weapons with Israel?
As she headed to the venue of her lecture, she was confronted by an Israel supporter who was escorted away by police.
There are two protests taking place, one by a small pro-Israel crowd accusing the UN rapporteur of anti-Semitism and another one by a pro-Palestinian crowd who say they consider Francesca Albanese as a hero and a champion for human rights.
Since her arrival in the UK, the attacks on Ms. Albanese from pro-Israel groups have been relentless but futile. As the UN Special Rapporteur, Albanese has spent years reminding the world of what international law says about the rights and responsibilities of the occupier and the occupied. Ahead of her visit to the UK, she published a report accusing Israel of committing genocide and apartheid. That drew the wrath of not just Israel, but its main backer, the United States, with outgoing Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield accusing Albanese of anti-Semitism and calling for her dismissal from the UN. Israel's smear campaigns against Albanese predate October 7th. Not one to be silenced, she's gone in the other direction, and by doing so, inspired more global Palestine solidarity. Saeed Pourreza, London.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
This is IRIB English Radio. With you early in the morning. With you at midday. With you till the night's end. IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. Taking officials with military and intelligence experience out of decision-making positions while arming Netanyahu with even more intelligence information access could easily lead to the weakening of the Zionist regime's strategic decision-making. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "What could be more problematic for the Zionist regime government, however, is the potential negative outcomes of Benjamin Netanyahu having a free hand in his decision-making power and interpretation of intelligence information. The Zionist regime ministerial committee on legislation is slated to form a new intelligence division that would report directly to the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to provide alternative information aiding any security-relating decisions. This comes as the Zionist regime premier takes near dictator levels of power. A bill proposed by Likud Party member of Knesset, Amit Halevi, would create what is being dubbed the Ifeha Misbra, Devil's Advocate Intelligence Unit. This intelligence unit would report directly to PM Benjamin Netanyahu and have the powers granted to it, which allows for direct requests to be made to Israeli intelligence services that they provide information. If the legislation is indeed passed following the discussion with the ministerial committee, leaders in Israel and security cabinet would then have to consult with this devil's advocate body and ask to provide alternative intelligence assessments. No decisions would be made without such consultations. Why this is important is it signals the Zionist regime prime minister is closing on seizing an enormous amount of decision-making power. If we simply look at what has been happening throughout the war, child killer Benjamin Netanyahu has been faced with significant pushback against various strategies and pushed to investigate the intelligence failure that brought about the lack of readiness to deal with October 7 Al-Aqsa storm operation last year. At every turn, Netanyahu is choosing to avoid accountability for the most significant security breach in Israeli regime society, while he also lives with the fear in the back of his mind that an end to the war could mean he sees the inside of a jail cell as a result of his ongoing corruption trial. Immediately after the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, the Zionist regime formed a unity government's war cabinet, which included opposition figures Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot. Gantz and Eisenkot were not always political opponents of Benjamin Netanyahu. In fact, both of them had been in senior military positions under the rule of the Zionist regime prime minister. Eisenkot was the former Israeli chief of staff for the military, while Benny Gantz had been the war minister under Netanyahu, in addition to holding other senior military positions in the past. In June, Eisenkot and Gantz left the war cabinet, leading to its dissolution by the Zionist regime prime minister. These were not the only officials to have resigned up to that point or since, yet they were certainly the most important. Leading up to the war cabinet being dissolved, Netanyahu's fascist coalition partners, like Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir and Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, were urging the Israeli PM to get rid of these opposition figures and pursue a more aggressive policy vis-à-vis the Palestinians and regional actors. Even more recently, Benjamin Netanyahu decided to sack his war minister Yoav Gallant, who was reported to have been at constant loggerheads with the Zionist regime premier on countless issues. Israel Katz was the man chosen to replace Gallant, a politician loyal to Netanyahu and who has little actual military experience that would make him a prime candidate for the job. Therefore, it has been widely reported across the Israeli domestic media that Benjamin Netanyahu had fired Gallant and replaced him with himself. What is for sure is that the Zionist regime prime minister just strengthened his own hand when it comes to decision-making on key issues, ensuring that a hawk who favors every conceivable war is in a position of power. Furthermore, the creation of this new intelligence unit would add another layer of decision-making power to Netanyahu's position. He would be briefed by a body that answers to him and would educate his own decision-making processes. It was recently revealed that Eliezer Feldstein, a top Netanyahu advisor, had been arrested in connection with a series of leaked documents from within his office. While many interpreted the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu's aide as evidence that there had been a serious security breach, the reality was that the majority of the leaked documents were actually fabricated, indicating a deliberate series of leaks had been made. In this case, the formation of such an intelligence body would not likely be impeded by the ongoing leak incident. What could be more problematic for the Zionist regime government, however, is the potential negative outcomes of Benjamin Netanyahu having a free hand in his decision-making power and interpretation of intelligence information. Prior to October 7, the Zionist regime leadership had not anticipated that the Palestinian resistance would launch its surprise attack, despite intelligence information that was indicative of just this. Taking officials with military and intelligence experience out of decision-making positions while arming Netanyahu with even more intelligence information access could easily lead to the weakening of the Zionist regime's strategic decision-making. For instance, there may be hardline policies pursued on a number of fronts, including Iran, Iraq, Yemen, or Syria, which could lead to another security catastrophe for the Zionists. What the creation of this body could also indicate is a lack of solid information and the need to check it in order to verify certain information.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to find light in this life of darkness as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, what an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. We are talking about how to find some light in this life of darkness as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So, of course, we are all searching for a little bit of light, a little bit of hope, a little bit of mercy, a little bit of joy in this life and this world, which just seems to be filled up with darkness. And if it wasn't bad one day, it seems like the next day is worse, and the day after that is even worse. So we can all kind of agree that things seem to be very slum, things seem to be very sad and gloomy, and so we really do need some sort of light and joy and prosperity and happiness. So where should we look for that light, this kind of feeling of prosperity and happiness in our lives? Unfortunately, God forbid, some people turn to alcohol, some people turn to drugs, some people turn to music, some people even turn towards illicit relationships with the opposite gender, and thinking that this is going to bring light and prosperity and happiness to our lives, when in reality, this has a completely opposite effect. And we can see this in society, that the use of alcohol and drugs and music in certain aspects, and of course illicit relationships, they all lead towards the destruction of the individual, the destruction of the family unit, the destruction of the society, and the destruction of nations. And we see this playing out all across the world in various places where these things are done very commonly. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about where we can find a little bit of light in this world of darkness. Well, it was kind of important to talk about, you know, the false places where we turn to try to acquire light. Because, you know, unfortunately, sometimes in the chaos and the mass propaganda and misinformation, you know, that the Western world in general, and specifically the very consumeristic, capitalistic philosophies try to push, we fall into things like alcohol and drugs and sex and fashion and these kind of things, right? So we find that when it comes to the Islamic lifestyle, that when we are talking about light, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he has a very beautiful statement which helps to guide us. His Eminence, he says that religion, deen, is light. He says that ad-deen un-noor, that deen is light. And so what is deen? What is religion other than this Islamic lifestyle which we are constantly talking about on A to Z? This Islamic lifestyle is religion. Religion is the Islamic lifestyle, and the Islamic lifestyle is religion. And I guarantee you
that when you start to follow this Islamic lifestyle, slowly but surely, in any kind of small steps that you want to take, you will start to feel like this light is entering your life. Just give it a try, see, and find out for yourself how this Islamic lifestyle can provide you with that much needed light in this dark world. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Limelight. In today's fast-paced news cycle, it's common for breaking news to fade quickly from attention. Yet, the Zionist regime's genocidal campaign in Gaza, which has already claimed more than 44,000 Palestinian lives, has broken this trend, remaining persistently in the public eye. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, "The sanguinary scenes of slaughter in Gaza over the past 400 days, without a day's respite, have shocked the world, but failed to move it into action to force the U.S. regime to end supply of weapons to the murderers in Tel Aviv, who have so far killed at least 44,000 people, 70% of whom are women and children. Once flourishing towns and cities, as well as refugee camps, the last shelter of the displaced, reduced to rubble, one of the worst catastrophes in history, is about to unfold. Yet, the self-styled advocates of human rights, along with countries that have the means to confront the genocidal Zionist entity, content themselves with mere verbal condemnation that will not stop." What is more shocking, however, is the silence of rich and seemingly powerful Muslim states sharing borders with occupied Palestine or in its vicinity and equipped with large armies and modern weapons capable of ending the genocide, if not the end of 74 years of occupation. The heads of these states have not even taken a leaf out of the golden book of the Axis of Resistance, which is bravely battling usurper Israel by targeting its military installations and doubtlessly offering martyrs in the process. Where is their manliness? Which school of thought do they follow? Whether their Islamic conscience? When will it be aroused? Whom are they deceiving, except themselves, with their silly excuses? Would they like to suffer the same fate as that of Gaza? Will their betrayal of the sacred cause of Al-Aqsa Mosque go unanswered? What prevents them from marching to the aid of their Arab Muslim brethren? Why are they afraid of the overinflated might of the aging U.S.? Who will save them from the wrath of God on the day of reckoning? These are among the questions demanding urgent answers from members of the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC. One of Lebanon is facing a brutal invasion. Another, Syria, is under frequent aerial and ground attacks for years, resulting in the killing of its citizens and its guests, while the UN remains a mute spectator. True, the Ansarullah-led government of Yemen plays a crucial role in bravely challenging the might of the US and the UK to block the Zionist entity's access to the Red Sea, while Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units, PMU, whose fighting prowess defeated the American-supported macabrely murderous Takfiri terrorists last decade, have successfully targeted Israel's seaports on the Mediterranean Sea. It is still not too late. All it needs is consciousness. The moment other Muslim states summon up the courage, like the Islamic Republic of Iran, to militarily confront usurper Israel, then only will the Gaza genocide end. Iran, as the sovereign, independent, and Islamic country, has already shattered the myth of the military might of the illegal Zionist entity in defense of the oppressed people of Palestine. It will continue to wreak vengeance on the criminals in Tel Aviv until the victory of the oppressed over the oppressors, whether or not the rest of the OIC members wake up to the collective threats posed to them by devilish US-Israel deal.
Israel Watch welcomes you. The recent clashes in Amsterdam, where Israelis removed Palestinian flags amidst supporters of Palestine, along with the repercussions of Hezbollah targeting the heart of Israel with rockets and drones against settlers, have been key topics highlighted by the Hebrew media. We will discuss these issues with our guest in the studio, the editor-in-chief of Al Jumhuriya newspaper, Mr. Tariq Tarshishi. It's a pleasure to have you with us, esteemed guest.
Thank you so much.
The clashes that occurred in Amsterdam following a soccer match where Israeli fans tore up Palestinian flags in the city drew significant attention from the Hebrew media, which characterized these confrontations as violent. Mr. Tariq Tarshishi, how do you contextualize the confrontations that took place in Amsterdam, especially following the actions of Israeli fans burning Palestinian flags in the Dutch city?
This reflects the Zionist deep-seated animosity towards the Palestinian people and their cause. The Palestinian flag has become a source of agitation for them. Just seeing it triggers reactions that reveal their racism and oppression, showcasing the Zionist intense hatred aimed at the Palestinian community. This hostility is evident in Gaza and the West Bank, where it is only natural for Palestinians to stand up for their dignity and honor. It was natural for any Israeli with Zionist mentality to attack any Palestinian who wants to show the sign of his country. They simply raised to shoot them. This is what happened.
Was the provocation intentional, in your opinion?
In my opinion, it was intentional because they were the ones who started tearing up the Palestinian flag, not the Palestinians who attacked them at first. Their actions prompted a response, which further reveals the nature of the project that Netanyahu is working on.
Netanyahu said that what happened in Amsterdam is anti-Semitism.
We are Semitic people before being identified as Jews. In history books, we learned from a young age about our identity. When asked about Arabs, the answer is that Arabs are a Semitic people, descended from Shem, the son of Noah, and from Bin Qahtan, who inhabit the Arabian Peninsula. We are Semitic. We existed before others. It seems like whenever someone speaks out against Israel, even if they are not criticizing Jews as a religious group, they are immediately labeled an anti-Semitic. This notion is tied to their biblical and Talmudic origins, which claim they are the chosen people of God, suggesting they are the first people in the world, while others hold little value. This is evident in the current situation in Palestine, how the Israelis claim they have a historical right in a region which is tied to Arabs and Muslims. They understand that Islam is a universal faith, not limited to Arabs alone. This animosity towards the Islamic Republic of Iran stems from its unwavering support for Palestine since its inception. Naturally, they will accuse anyone of anything, and unfortunately, some in the West believe these false claims.
Let's shift our focus, dear sir, from Amsterdam to the Israeli occupation entity, which is currently facing rocket and drone attacks from Hezbollah. This is in response to the aggressive war launched by the occupying army against Lebanon. Reports from Hebrew media record scenes of settlers suffering from the ongoing resistance operations. Professor Tariq Tarshishi, it seems that Hezbollah is achieving military success. Of course, this is within the framework of the enemy's equation. To what extent are the settlers currently suffering due to the falling rockets and drones? This situation is putting pressure on the occupying army and consequently on Benjamin Netanyahu's administration.
It creates pressure because, first of all, I don't believe the narrative presented by the Israelis. Their claim that they're waging war on Lebanon, Hezbollah, and the resistance to bring settlers back to northern Palestine is framed as a humanitarian effort. They want to portray it as if they're trying to help displaced people, which seems to gain some acceptance in the Western world. They downplay the situation, suggesting that their fight is solely to return the settlers. However, all the destruction they're causing in Lebanon, along with the killings and massacres, including demolishing homes on top of their residence, these will not work. They use the excuse of wanting to return the settlers, knowing full well that these settlers won't come back under such circumstances. Even if the resistance decided to withdraw to the northern Litani or the Beqa Valley, would that really provide hope for these settlers? Absolutely not, because even a single long-range missile could strike northern occupied Palestine, making it impossible for them to return. This narrative is merely a pretext for their aggression against Lebanon and the resistance, aimed at eliminating the resistance altogether. This is not true at all. We all know that if only one long-range missile is fired against northern Palestine, that would be enough for the settlers to refrain from returning to these areas. In fact, This story is being used as an excuse for aggression against Lebanon and the resistance with the aim of eliminating the resistance.
There have been complaints from settlers about the lack of sufficient safe spaces to protect themselves from the rockets and drones of Hezbollah. What does this indicate with regard to your remarks?
Well, this indicates that there are still settlers living there, and not all of them have left their homes in the north to move deeper into the occupied Palestinian territories. This highlights the ongoing deception and propaganda from Israel regarding the situation in this war. Settlers are expressing concerns about a lack of security measures and shelters, revealing more about the reality of their circumstances. They're gradually speaking out about the truth of what is happening, exposing the lies they've been told. Whether it's a soldier or a civilian or even a settlement mayor, they're all voicing similar sentiments. This reflects the level of confusion and turmoil within both the Israeli administration and society. Currently, Israeli society is experiencing significant fragmentation, and while we can't predict exactly how this will evolve over time, it is likely to become more apparent.
Mr. Tarshishi, the complex situation in the aggressive war on Lebanon, particularly the falling of rockets and drones deep into occupied territory, was addressed by the mayor of the occupied city of Ra'ananeh. He elaborated to the Hebrew media on the atmosphere of fear experienced by settlers in that region. Ra'ananeh is one of the many occupied cities currently facing challenges from rockets and drones launched by Hezbollah. How do you assess the difficult reality that Israeli settlers are experiencing in these cities and settlements? And what does their endurance in this situation signify?
This confrontation being waged by the resistance under the banner of inflicting pain on the enemy raises the question, why inflict pain on the enemy? The reason is that they also cause us suffering. They inflict pain upon us just as we inflict pain upon them. In this path, they ask Allah for help. The enemy causes us distress, and thus we seek to cause them distress in return. The resistance plays this role in inflicting pain on the enemy, whose capacity to endure is uncertain. Consequently, we hear these voices emerging, and I maintain that the resistance remains committed to the ethical standards of warfare. To this day, it has not targeted purely civilian locations, but has focused on military sites. And this is while Israel attacks has caused brutal destruction in Lebanon and the targeting of civilians. It is evident, for instance, a few nights ago, there was significant destruction in the southern suburbs of Lebanon. They are targeting civilians. The following day, the same narrative emerged, with Israeli claims of having targeted military warehouses and positions of Hezbollah. What military warehouses are they talking about? Who are the Israelis deceiving? They are brutally killing women and children and civilians. The Israelis, the issue lies in the fact that the West tends to believe these Israeli narratives. In my opinion, it is essential for all these truths to be revealed, especially as this conflict continues. The longer the war persists, the more the realities will come to light, exposing the falsehoods of Israeli propaganda and the flimsy justifications upon which they base their military actions. Ultimately, it is clear that you, as Israelis, are the aggressors against us, as Muslims and Arabs, attempting to portray the narrative that we are the ones who are attacking you. In reality, it is you who are inflicting violence upon us. The events surrounding the Operation Al-Aqsa flood were a direct response to a long history of aggression, killing, and destruction faced by the Palestinian people, particularly in the Gaza Strip. Since 2005, Gaza has been under siege, and it is only natural for its people to seek to lift this blockade and assert their rights.
In this context, the occupying forces in Lebanon have failed to achieve a significant ground accomplishment along the border with southern Lebanon. Zionist experts have expressed their conviction regarding the challenges of fulfilling the objectives of the war against Lebanon, which include the resettlement of settlers to the north and the defeat of Hezbollah. Mr. Tariq Tarshishi, what is your assessment of the views expressed by Zionist experts regarding the difficulty of achieving both the stated and underlying objectives in southern Lebanon, particularly in relation to the returning of the settlers to the north and the weakening of Hezbollah to the point of defeat?
The Israelis will not win this war, as evidenced by their failure to occupy any territory in southern Lebanon. Every time they enter an area, the resistance is ready with their missiles, causing them to retreat under fire, killing and wounding Israeli soldiers. The resistance has inflicted casualties on Israeli soldiers, proving that Israel cannot achieve victory in Lebanon. This was clear when Mati Sedas and Nasrallah insisted they would destroy their tanks and they could not do anything about it. For example, sometimes they enter these border villages or border towns, such as Bint Jibail and others, and then they just blow up some houses there and cowardly flee the area, and then pathetically broadcast the videos of how they blow them up. Well, they can demolish as many structures as they want, but they will not achieve any military or political victory. Ultimately, the results of this war will be detrimental to the current Israeli leadership, especially with ongoing corruption trials. Soon, they will likely try to delay accountability for their actions.
Mr. Tariq, the question raised pertains to Netanyahu's military options against Lebanon, particularly following the dismissal of Yoav Gallant and the appointment of Israel Katz, who has notably begun to issue threats and warnings.
Yoav Gallant was quite enthusiastic about the war against Hezbollah, especially just 2 weeks after the Operation Al-Aqsa flood. However, Netanyahu seemed to have a different perspective. It's puzzling how he could allow Yoav Gallant to express himself this way, considering he's the American administration's representative in the Israeli regime. This reveals a contradiction in their views on the war and its future. Netanyahu finds himself unable to retreat or halt the war, which may lead to an escalation that ultimately brings about his downfall. We might witness this unfold soon. As we discussed off the record, Netanyahu seems to believe that striking the Iranian Islamic government will incapacitate the entire resistance axis. He thinks that if they target the leadership, the rest will crumble. However, I believe he's misreading the situation. The resistance supported by Iran is not merely about political parties or military forces. It is rooted in a deep ideology and belief that cannot be extinguished. As Imam Hussein said, "You will not erase our remembrance." And his sister Zainab Salamullah alayhi also stated that "You will not erase our remembrance." This means that the future generation will definitely recite our stories. Similarly, their efforts will never ever erase resistance. The resistance is an ongoing movement and will remain as long as this ideology exists. The resistance will remain alive in the entire world, and especially in Arab and Islamic countries.
Israel has begun to threaten and become aware of this.
It seems like there are some threats being made, and it appears he's giving himself a window of opportunity until January 20, the date of Donald Trump's inauguration, who is his friend and ally. The call that took place between him and Trump a couple of days ago isn't something we need to understand in details. I'm not sure if we can get all the information, but there was a prior conversation when Trump met him in Florida before the elections, and during that visit to Congress, Trump mentioned that if I won the presidency, I don't want there to be a war. He said, "Go finish your project before I win the presidential elections." It was as if he expected that he would win. Therefore, I believe that Netanyahu will lead us into several wars and attacks over the next 2 months, whether in Lebanon, Gaza, or even across the region. I wouldn't rule out the possibility of a full-scale war. If you pay attention to what the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran said, both with the Assembly of Experts and previously during the commemoration of Sidi Hasan Nasrallah's 40th day after his martyrdom, he spoke about Iran defending its dignity and sovereignty as well as supporting the resistance front. In my view, the Islamic Republic of Iran has shifted from a defensive position to an offensive one. The upcoming response to the recent Israeli attack will help us understand the direction the region is heading.
Editor-in-Chief, Mr. Tariq Tarshishi, thank you for joining us in this episode of Israel Watch. Thanks, take care.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
فیلم فیخ از علوم شریفه اسلامی است.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked.
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
self-purification is the most significant factor.
Imamat yek asl zinda ast dar tarikh Islam.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Please stay tuned.
یه مطلب دیگر این که حالا آقا من حالش ندارم نه حالش دارم بخونم نه حالش دارم شما بخونی گوش بدم.
Some people might say I can't recite the Quran and I don't like to listen to someone else reciting it. For such people it is recommended to have a Quran in their houses. The mere presence of the Quran in someone's house might keep the devils away from you. So the mere presence of the Quran is itself useful and has surely positive effects. We can also ask for divine healings through the verses of the Holy Quran.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
هر کدام از این آیات یک آثاری داره. هر آیه یه اثری داره.
As you might know, every verse of the Holy Quran has its own effect. This means that every verse has its own fragrance, as any fruit has its own specific fragrance and color. Through the verses of the Quran, we can reach divine healing if we have faith in what we read and we believe in its positive effects.
Thank you.
you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, for listening to this episode of Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Ayatollah Nasiri. Till another episode and another short speech of a great alim or a scholar, fi amanillah, God bless you all.